Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu. You wouldn't think that this would be the kind of problem that it actually is, but really truly is. And it's one that pastors' congregations face almost every single Sunday. Every single Sunday that there's a visitor, someone who's not a member or never been there before, is sitting in the pew on Sunday morning. What do you do with them? You say, well, you make them feel welcome. Yeah, that's great. How? Do you point them out? You know, there was a day when I remember growing up as a kid, and the visitors all were asked to stand up at the beginning or the end of the service. They were acknowledged, they were thanked, they were welcomed, and some people just want to be left alone. What does the church do? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about greeting Sunday morning worship visitors, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
What has fundamentally changed about the experience for that walk-in visitor on Sunday morning in America?
Well, I think the most fundamental change that's taken place is the people up in what used to be a pulpit. Does anybody have a pulpit anymore? I mean, whatever that plexiglass thing is up there at the front on the stage near the rock band, you know, at the front of the American megachurch, the key to all this is the people up there are now paranoid about what to do when it comes to greeting guests and visitors and newcomers and whatever. They've seen so much conflicting data that shows that there really isn't anything they can do that's safe. I first remember back in the Willow Creek era. Does anybody remember the Willow Creek era?
Quaint.
Toward the end of the 80s and in the early 90s, when everybody was, you know, the media was so fired up about megachurches, you know, as if megachurches hadn't existed in Southern Baptist and Southern life for decades. But everybody was wild about megachurches, and one of the things that came out of the research by George Barna and a bunch of other people who were doing seeker-friendly churches. Do you remember seeker-friendly churches? The whole point was that you were supposed to listen to what people liked and didn't like about church and make the church experience as comfortable and inviting as you could. And one of the things that showed up was that significant numbers of people went to megachurches with thousands of other people because they enjoyed the anonymity of slipping in for a couple of weeks, just kind of watching the performance and then deciding whether this was something they wanted to be a part of, where with them in control, like good American shoppers, they were then able to make their own kind of decision about, you know, maybe they went to coffee hour, maybe they did this, that, or that, and the other, but nobody jumped into their space and pushed them. Do you get the point? So ever since then, churches have wondered, well, are we supposed to be friendly or not? Because one of the other things that shows up, the flip side of that coin, is that you have newcomers and visitors telling these horror stories about how they went to this church and nobody talked to them, nobody greeted them, nobody was friendly. Well, which is it? What's a church supposed to do? Is it supposed to be friendly and happy and slap you on the back and ask you all kinds of questions in an attempt to make sure that they meet your needs and that they want to join you on your journey or whatever the phrase is? Are you supposed to do that, or are you supposed to leave them alone? And how do you know? So this whole deal of the typical American church asking, you know, hey, all the visitors, stand up, tell us who you are, who's with you, introduce your family, tell us where you're from, and tell us what you're doing here. Well, all of those are tremendously invasive questions. In an age of divorce, blended families, and all kinds of other reasons, that they're the very kinds of questions that turn off people. many people who want to go to a seeker-friendly church. Yet, at the same time, you're supposed to throw out a welcome mat. How do you do both? In my column this week for Universal, I talked to Tom Rayner, who is one of the brightest minds, who's plugged into the most data at the Southern Baptist Convention's Lifeway Resources think tank in Nashville. And Tom totally admits in his writing that this conflict exists, and says you have to start off talking about what you don't do, and then you have to figure out what it is that your church is supposed to do. And so he wrote an article recently, 10 Things You Never Say to a Newcomer in Your Church. And one of the things that you never say to them is, I'm sorry, you're sitting in my pew. Which gets us down to the fact that I just got so intrigued with this. I was intrigued by the symbolism of churches not being able to do anything safe in terms of greeting newcomers. For example, after a while, people begin to realize, well, it may not be nice to try to make people stand up and everybody turns and looks at them in the pew. So maybe we should do something that puts the onus on our local members. So then a lot of churches started doing what? They said, well, the congregation, all now rise, and newcomers, you just stay seated, and then we'll all turn and welcome you. Well, can you picture anything weirder than that? I mean, in the sense that they all stand up, you sit down, and now everybody around you, like an ocean of hands, turns and aims your way. You know, I mean, if you've got an introverted person sitting in that pew, that's got to freak you out, right? I mean, you don't even get to choose how you mingle. It's involuntary mingling. Like, you know, hundreds of stalkers all at once. So the point, and I'm glad you're laughing at this, because if you start laughing about it, you begin to realize what a ticklish question this is for church leaders. But can you think of anything more important than that a church finding some way to help newcomers feel welcomed and wanted?
Now, I got to get your thoughts on this. Two contrasting experiences. My typical Sunday morning in a congregation where we could only fit 150 people into the pews, and that would be very tightly,
right,
very tightly seated there. And you do, especially as the pastor, but the lay people as well, they notice someone who they don't recognize. It's quite evident, and we have a way of dealing with it. We say hello out there before the service. We do have greeters at the door and things mm-hmm. like that, but we generally leave them alone and just acknowledge their presence. Contrast that with several years ago, I and my producer were in Houston, Texas, went to Joel Osteen's church, if you call it a church. We walked in and out of the place, completely anonymous. No one could have known whether we were visiting. It would have been just impossible for that determination to mm-hmm. have been made. There were so many people there, probably 11,000 people.
Unless maybe you lined up and bought a tour T-shirt or something like that, and
yes.
they took your credit card.
But Joel's got the big church, and they essentially ignored us and just hoped that we'd come back.
Yeah. At which point, you then, like I said, like good American consumers, you then opt in to the services of the church that you choose to affirm, right? These are just really radically different ways of looking at church. In my conversation with Tom Rayner, he's aware, because of my family connections and stuff, he's aware that I grew up Southern Baptist and that I'm now Eastern Orthodox. And, of course, in an Eastern Orthodox context, this would have to be anyone's short description of a non-user-friendly Sunday morning experience. I mean, in the sense that there'd be some churches where it's in a foreign language. I mean, but, it, you know, at my church, you know, on the south side of Baltimore for the next 2 weeks before I move, I mean, my church is about as friendly as you can get, and it's about 95% convert. But when we see people come in that we don't know and we know they're visitors, usually someone will walk over with a copy of the worship book and then say, is this your first time in an Orthodox church? You know, you get the answer to that, and then you say, would you like me to join you and help you through the service today? Make sure that you know where you are so that, you know, you can feel as comfortable as possible. I'll help take care of getting you to the right hymns and the right readings, you know, depending on what season we're in, et cetera. And people can either say yes or no. And most of them are flabbergasted and say yes, at which point you now have a member of the church. You're never forced to stand up or anything like that, but you have a member of the church next to you kind of helping guide you through this very complex worship experience. You know, like I said, we're the kind of church where Gregory the New Theologian is 1,400 years ago. You know, I mean, we've been around. Then if they choose to come downstairs for lunch, most Orthodox churches serve lunch after the service because everyone's been fasting since the previous evening before Divine Liturgy. At that point, someone is sitting with them eating lunch. We'll go around the room and we'll ask the church members to introduce this person. And basically all they do is kind of wave, you know, and then we move on. So it's kind of a little bit of both, but I could see a lot of folks would say that for introverts, that would be a really scary experience. So I guess what I'm trying to get listeners to understand is we live in a day and age where we have two seriously conflicting trends. One is the desire for a consumer-centric anonymity where the visitor is in on their terms doing what they want to do. Yet at the same time, we live in a culture where it's very important to seem friendly and inviting and concerned. Isn't that an interesting thing to try to balance?
So what is the kind of, in terms of Rainer's thinking, what's the future of this issue? Because this isn't going away. The consumerist mentality, the leave me alone and let me be mentality is as strong as no one even acknowledged my presence. I'll never go back. What's the future as far as he's concerned?
Well, he thinks, he wrote the article, 10 Things Never to Say, so that people understand that there are some definitive things you don't do. So a woman is standing there with her two young children. You don't walk up and say, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so. Where's your husband? I mean, you could be dealing with the woman at the well, for all you know. You know, and what that says to her is the assumption here is you're not welcome unless you fit exactly at this moment in your life into our concept of what family looks like. He's got several other examples of things you never say. You never walk up to a couple where there's an older man and a younger woman or whatever and say, are these your children? He told one horror story, which I put in my column, in this age where a lot of people are adopting children. He said he heard a direct story from someone who experienced this, that a man was standing there with several of his children, one of whom was adopted from Africa, and someone walked up and asked him, hand on a Bible, asked him, did you have the option of what color skin your kid would have? I mean, like, you know, like, did you expect the skin to be that dark? Instead of punching the person out, Rainer said that the father just chose to go with it and say, oh, yeah, the state officials there had a set of swatches we could pick out. Yeah, and Rainer said, like, I wish I was joking when I tell this story. I wish I could joke. So, I mean, there are things that you definitely don't do. When someone is coming into church late, you don't say, hey, wait, the service has started already, letting them know that they're late. You could go over and say, wait just a moment, there'll be another moment to enter here in just a second. Can I help you find a pew, you know, or whatever? And you also, at some point, you have to tell your people that they are not going to church in a movie theater. Their spot in the pew is not sacred. And if you need to move over and you need to rearrange your normal comfortable pew experience to let a family with six kids be able to sit together, you do it in order to help people feel welcomed. So a lot of the comfort of the small church experience has got to change to be more welcoming. So anyway, he listed these 10 things that you don't do. The other thing that I thought he was real interested, he said that I thought was real interesting, is that pastors are going to have to take this seriously. This is not an issue on which they can afford to be apathetic. And he made a very practical suggestion, is that he suggested that pastors consider asking new members soon after they've gone through the process of joining the church, asking new members to take turns as greeters, because they would know what it feels like. And they would have just gone through the experience and be able to kind of understand maybe where people are coming from when they walk in. I thought that was a very practical, healthy suggestion that some church leaders need to think about. But writing about this in a news column, a lot. This is the sort of column that I write that some say, well, did you think this was news? And I said, it's only news at the level of local churches and people who care about whether their religious institutions survive or not. This is actually the kind of column that I get more feedback about than almost anything else I write, because it really hits people at the level of their local life and congregation, and they can picture themselves sitting there in that pew, you know, being told, I'm sorry, you're going to have to move. You're sitting in the place where my grandfather sat, you know, 50 years ago. My dad sat there. I sat there. That's my spot. You know, they can imagine that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about greeting Sunday morning worship visitors on this Friday afternoon, May the 29th, when we come back. There are two different universes on Sunday morning facing the same problem. We'll get Terry's thoughts right after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you find yourself near the heart of Angelina County, Texas, then God wants you to visit the First Lutheran Church of Lufkin. We are gathered by the Holy Spirit to hear God's word of forgiveness in Christ, crucified for sinners, each Sunday morning beginning at 10:15. Further details and contact information can be found at our website, fll.ctsmemberconnect.net, fll.ctsmemberconnect.net.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about greeting Sunday morning worship visitors. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly on Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, earlier we were talking about your experience as Eastern Orthodox. We have similar liturgical backgrounds here. You talk about a divine liturgy. We talk about divine service in the Lutheran tradition. That's one universe on Sunday morning where the learning curve for the new visitor is something in addition to simply feeling welcome. Then at the other end, there's the other universe where churches have purposefully omitted and abandoned almost all historic liturgy and tradition in order to make Sunday morning as familiar to the visitor as possible. These are two different universes on Sunday morning dealing with the same problem.
Yes, but you just said the exact magic words. They're both dealing with the same problem. And they have to find a way to address that problem within the strengths and weaknesses of their own tradition. But you can't wave a magic wand and make it go away. But I want to address one other thing. I'm a singer. You know, I'm a guitar player. Music is very, very important to me. I have, since converting to Orthodoxy, I have spent a little bit of time occasionally in a megachurch, either covering something or visiting friends or whatever. And there's an interesting parallel here. I think there are some people who are so far into the world of seeker-friendly post-worship worship or whatever that they forget that to a stranger who walks in, who doesn't know all the same 30 praise choruses that are currently hot on the pop charts, and you put the words up on the screen and there are no notes, that can be as off-putting and intimidating as someone walking into a Greek Orthodox church and having the whole service being Greek. You know, everybody's got their hands in the air, they're swaying around, and they're singing at the top of their lungs, and you're looking up there going, I see some words. Could I have some notes, please? Like, what's this chorus that everybody seems to know and I don't? Why does everybody know when the drum fill is going to come here and I just sang out, you know, right on and went out into empty air? I mean, help, please. Some of the aspects of the seeker-friendly church, ironically, are very insider culture. And for someone who walks in from a hymnal background or something, they can feel totally lost. So I remember a couple of years ago, I did a column about a church out in Arizona that has like six different worship services. And when you walk in, they ask you, you know, like, how old are you, and name your favorite musicians. And then they tell you which service to go based on who your favorite bands are. So, you know, you've got like, the guy said, we have the Pearl Jam service. You know, we've got an Eagles service. We've got a techno service. And so he described all of these different musical approaches so that people could get the music that makes them feel right at home. And then I said, what do you do at Easter? And he let out this long sigh. He said, gosh, that's a real problem. Everybody's supposed to be able to worship together at Easter. He said, so the negotiations on what we do in that service can go on for days. So like you just said, those are two completely different worlds of church, aren't they? I mean, at your local Orthodox church, they're not discussing what we do at Easter, right? I mean, frankly, we've been doing the same thing at Easter, you know, for something like two millennia, the basic structures of this stuff. And, you know, we don't have to have a committee vote over what happens at Easter. This guy was speaking of real pain of people from all of these different services being together for the holiest day of Christianity, and they don't know what to sing. They don't know how to be in the pew next to each other. That's a completely different approach to church. But how you greet people, how you welcome them, how you make them feel a part of whatever it is you're doing, that's an issue that every single kind of church has to find some way to address, because that's universal and it's very human and it's affected by the world all around us. I just found it a very poignant subject.
One final thing, I was intrigued by something you said before, where people might say, you know, the column is interesting, but is it news? This really is, especially in the days when social media has been screaming about, especially in light of the recent Pew survey that came out.
Yeah, good point.
Christianity's dead or dying. This really is a newsworthy question, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the people who are becoming the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, are the folks that are kind of drifting out of the cultural, tangential, you know, not really dedicated world of sort of Christians. But can you think that's probably one of the groups of people who may decide to visit? But even when they walk in the door, they are a completely different visitor than someone who is already highly committed to your tradition and say they've just moved into the area from another church where they were deacons or they were high, you know. There's just no easy way out of this, which is why I keep using the word poignant. You know, a pastor, this is life and death stuff. This is how you try to find out what people's needs are, how you try to help them feel like they could be a part of this living, breathing body of worshipers in this place. But how do you take the first steps without either offending them or ignoring them? Like I said, I just found this to be a fascinating topic, and I'll come back to it again at some point in the future.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Holly Shear, going over some lessons learned from the Duggar family sex abuse tragedy. She's written a column on that for The Federalist. We'll be right back.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We're going to take a look at the ecclesiastical model employed by much of American evangelicalism today, especially as put forward by the seeker-driven movement.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
We're going to take a look at where this idea of a vision-casting leader comes from, what its main tenets are, and we're going to compare that so-called ecclesiastical office to the biblical office of pastor to see if the two are actually synonymous and interchangeable, or if this concept of a vision-casting leader actually turns a pastor into a false prophet.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against vision-casting leaders in the church June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.